Okay. Thanks, John. So, Carl did an excellent job.
Very good. Is it Carl? Is that right?
Very good. I should have had you do my video. So, we're going to keep with the video theme here this morning, kind of give you a little bit of background. I've been messing with this video thing for a little bit, kind of had an epiphany about 2 years ago where I wanted to start doing a little bit more video tutorials. I'm an area agronomist. I give agronomic advice to 6.6 county agents, so I thought this would be a really good tool for them to use. Some of them have taken a lot of interest in it, so we're just kind of in the infancy stages of this, but I thought I'd go over some of my experiences with the whole video editing, video tutorial deal. So, been in my job for about 3 years now. A couple of trends that I've noticed. First one is that it does seem like our traditional meetings, we're not getting a lot of the younger producers. And that concerns me a little bit, and I guess there could be a few reasons for that. Maybe there's not that many younger producers out there, and that's definitely the truth. We're still in that baby boomer phase where they're doing most of the farming. But I do know there's a lot of younger producers out there that really aren't attending our meetings. And so maybe that's just not their kind of bag, if you will. So maybe they're not into sitting down for 4 hours and listening to four or five speakers get up and get a free chili lunch. You know, that's maybe not how they want to receive their information. And that consequently, they're going to be getting their information from other sources. But it does concern me a little bit. I guess everything on the internet's true, right? Yeah, that does concern me because I think you know, they're going to be making the decisions here about 10, 15 years from now. I kind of want to set them up so they can come to Extension, come to the university, and get real scientific, practical answers to whatever problems they're having. The other trend that I see in my territory, I have Wichita in my territory, the biggest city in Kansas, so there's some urban areas there. The northern tier of my territory covers the fringes of the urban areas of Kansas City, Lawrence, and Topeka. So we get a lot of urbanites moving out to the country. They get 5, they get 10 acres, maybe 80 acres. They get some sheep or some horses. This is a group that we've done some small acre workshops, and they get great attendance. These people are just thirsty for knowledge. They're kind of getting to that age where they're thinking about retiring. This is a little bit more of a hobby, but they really get into this small acre stuff, and they want that information. I think they're technical savvy. I think they do use the internet a lot, and I think they use some of these social medias like Facebook and YouTube as well to get some of their information. So kind of have two targets for my whole video tutorials. So I guess technology is nothing new. You know, we all probably have internet on probably 80% of our phones now. They're getting a lot more accessible. We're getting this new sort of social media like YouTube, Facebook. I'm not a Twitter guy yet. I can't get into that, but I actually did start a Facebook account 2 months ago with much resistance, but I think it's going to have some applicable qualities for my producers. If I see webworms out, I'm going to post updates on my Facebook account. And that's a good way. Some of my colleagues are getting some of their producers to follow them. But the whole YouTube thing really struck me is when propane got really high about 2 years ago, I was paying $300 to $400 a month for propane. So I didn't want to do that anymore, so I installed a corn pellet stove. Well, they wanted me to cut a 9-inch hole in the side of my house. So that kind of made me a little bit nervous. So I wanted to see somebody do it first. So I looked it up on YouTube, and sure enough, there's a guy in Canada that was showing a little demo on how to install a pellet stove. So that made me feel a little bit better, kind of had an epiphany. Hey, this is a great way to find information. YouTube's not just for entertainment, seeing little smiling babies. We can get a lot of information out of that as well. So I told that to my colleague who's actually now in Louisiana. He's a livestock counterpart out of my office, and he had the same idea. We're like, okay, let's get this going. And he actually moved to Louisiana about a year ago, so I'm kind of carrying the torch for this. The objectives or the goals of this whole thing is essentially to give newer media, specifically this whole video tutorial idea, to a couple different audiences, make the information more accessible to the public. Hopefully we'll bring in some of those younger producers. The other thing is that I do want to target these small acre type producers. They're really eager for this type of information. That's really where the direction of this talk and this first video clip is going to be pointed towards. So getting started, and that's some of the cost. I guess there's some numbers here. He had some friends back in A&M. He's originally an Aggie, and they're doing a similar deal called AgTV.org or something like that, where they're doing these little livestock 3 to 5 to 7 minute informational videos on livestock production. So we got some information from them. We got a list of what equipment they use. We bought a GL2 Canon camera. A little bit pricey. You know, that's $2,000. It's not an HD camera. I'll mention that later, but I think I wish I would have spent some money to get an HD because that's the direction everything's heading now. Wireless microphone is going to cost a little bit of money. Tripod definitely is going to be a necessity, so this is kind of a list for anybody, for the amateurs that want to get started in this. Those are going to be the three components that are definitely going to be needed, a camera, wireless mic, and a tripod. The editing software, as Carl mentioned, getting cheaper, actually Movie Maker, that's what I used to begin with. It's a great starter editing software. It comes with your Microsoft package, most Microsoft packages. You probably have it on there, you don't even know it. I didn't know I had it on my computer. Really simple, really basic, and can do a lot of good things. If you want to upgrade that a little bit, Sony Vegas was one that I bought for about $80. It's a little bit more complicated. I can't figure that one out yet. And then, Carl said, the Adobe Final Cut Pro is like $1,000. So if you really want to get into it, you can spend some money on that. But you can get a lot of this done for a lot cheaper. And again, to have an outlet. So Carl had a Wisconsin YouTube page, we have a K-State YouTube page. We're kind of behind times a little bit. Our hort department has put out dozens of videos on horticulture issues. Ag, we're a little bit behind. We don't have a whole lot of agronomy or livestock videos out just yet, but we do have that medium there for our whatever videos we do produce. So we do have a KSU YouTube page. My intention is to come up with a small acre work webpage where we can have presentations, data, and extension publications and videos as well. So how did my agents react to this? Well, they were excited. I kind of targeted that group that's the more urban areas, and they thought, well, that's great. They already had some ideas. I guess I've had some challenges in that. They're a little bit shy. They don't really want to get in front of the camera. So getting them to do this, getting our schedules to line up, it's been a little bit difficult, but I think I'll force them into it eventually. And then covering the right topics. You know, I want to keep this kind of specific ag-related. One of my agents wanted to do a video on trapping armadillos, so I'm not sure I really want to spend time doing that. But okay, so we'll watch a little video here. I did get one volunteer. We were doing a pasture walk for a couple that had just bought 80 acres out in the country, and we were showing them different plants and different trees, telling them how to manage that for livestock. And I told her about this idea, and so she said she was my first volunteer, said she would do it. So let's take a look here. Hopefully this video works.
Hi, I'm Val DeDorf, Natural Resources Extension Agent for Logan County. And welcome to the Research and Extension's YouTube page. We hope you find these video segments both useful and valuable to your operation. Being a native of Southeast Kansas, I know firsthand how valuable sexy can be to our stocker operations and our cow calf breeding. In our area of Kansas, we have the longest growing season and the highest rate of completion. We can graze fescue during April, May, and June, and again in the fall with proper fertilization. It is also the best adapted four-season grass for our winter season. In the late 1970s, it was discovered that cattle showing poor performance with toxoplasmosis symptoms were grazing effective fall fescue. Cattle grazing on effective pastures may show one or more clinical signs, such as decreased feed intake, decreased daily gain, lower milking ability, poor reproductive performance, necrosis of hooves and tail, a rough head coat, and additional time spent in water and shady areas. Mares can be affected by the toxins that infect the fescue as well. Research has shown that longer gestation periods and increased pooling problems are associated with grazing identified infected fescue. The fungus is found in the crowns of plants during the winter and slowly grows up the stem and eventually makes it to the seed head during the summer. There is little to no fungus found in the leaf itself. In Kansas, approximately 95% of our pastures are infected at an average rate of 64% infection. The Kansas State Plant Pathology Lab began testing for the presence of endophyte in 1984 and continues to do so for Kansas fields for $20. Other states need to check with their local extension office for lab availability and cost. Depending on the time of year, tillers, seed heads, or seed may be tested. However, the KSU labs for seed heads with the stem. When sampling tillers, the sample should include 50 tillers collected randomly throughout each sample unit. Testing of seed heads may be done during or after joining. The endophyte is found at the pit, making the testing easy. To do this, collect 50 random samples from base of the plant to the seed head. If there's any excess roots or soil, that may be discarded. Once you have 50 random samples collected, place in a plastic bag take more than one tiller from each plant. Tillers may be sampled throughout the growing season with best results in May through June or September through November. Management practices of identified infected pastures can help improve animal performance. Adding legumes to an infected pasture will reduce the level of toxins ingested into the additional forage source. Legumes also have a higher fruit protein level and are more digestible than fescue, resulting in an increased performance level. For more information on fescue identified, contact your local extension office. Thank you for your time today, and feel free to look around our site for other educational videos which you might find helpful.
Okay, so that was the first go-round. I got to applaud Delta. She did the scripting herself. She was the one that came up with the idea for the topic, and so I think this is a really good way to get the agents involved. And eventually, I hope that we can just get the equipment passed on to them. They can check it out, and they can essentially do all this themselves. Now, I probably should have leaned on our communications department a little bit more for this first go-round. I guess I'm a guy. I have a tendency just to do it. I don't read the instructions unless I have to. And so I learned a few things after that first shoot. I think it turned out okay. You'll notice that I did some things wrong. It was about 90 degrees this morning. She didn't want to stand in the sun and sweat. So she was in the shade. That kind of washed her out a little bit. The script. Now, she came up with a script, which is good. I guess I should have read through it and timed it, first of all, because there was a lot of editing I had to cut out to get it within that three-minute time span before it gets too long and people start tuning you out. But fine-tuning the script, I think I should have done that ahead of time a little bit better. And even though she wrote the script, she had a hard time remembering it. So, you know, I thought, well, some advice given to me was that we should do some cue cards. That'll help her get through that. Really finding enough footage of her reading it without having the script in her hand was kind of hard to do. I had to put in a lot of B-roll, or, you know, picture of the cattle and fescue and horses and whatnot. The B-roll footage, that's the excess, you know, take plenty of that. I guess the tip given to me was a good 8 seconds of still B-roll footage. I had a tendency to try and pan or zoom in and zoom out. That was a mistake. Just simple, keep it simple. That's the best thing that you can do. And again, I think investing in the HD camera would have been a better deal on the onset. So where do we go from here? Well, again, we're kind of targeting that specific audience, kind of the urbanites moving out to the country. I think there's some information they need about brush control. I get a lot of questions about brush control, weed control, so we're going to do a cut stump tree control video here this month yet. Some topics about livestock fencing. Pond management's always a big. I never get pond management questions, thank goodness. But they get asked that a lot. So some pond management videos, forage management videos would be really beneficial. So extend that, assemble that into a common website, again, with publications and data and whatnot. That'll be, I think, going to be a good thing for them. So some of my final thoughts. I feel like this has been a good experience. I think we're just starting out with this. We've got a lot of improvement we can make, but I think it's a good idea to keep on top of the social media and exploring all these new avenues for trying to distribute information. Brian started doing some webinars. I think we're starting to get into the webinar. We get a lot of positive response back from that. So doing webinars, these video tutorials, and some of these other social medias like Facebook are going to be a good thing in the future of extension. I think the agents will benefit from this. It just gets them to think outside the box. The other thing is, you know, they're constantly being asked to document impact. So being able to track the number of hits on a video, and then there's a software out there that can track how long they stay on a website. So that's all going to be important to them when they go to their county boards and say, well, what have you been doing? What kind of impacts have been making? And then finally, I think we can bring in these new clients that maybe aren't traditionally going to extension, but we can provide that information for them. We can bring some of these urbanites into extension more. And I do think eventually if we can get some of this information or we can get some ideas on good topics, this is going to be a way to reach that next generation of producers so they'll come back to extension for them. So I'm it. That's it for me, John. I can take some questions. Yes.
Yeah, I was just curious. How do you make this available for people that can't hear so well or attention to things that way and they forget what you said halfway through?
Are you talking specifically about my talk or the video? So the question was, how do you make it available for people that can't hear very well or the attention expands? That's exactly right. Well, hopefully you're interested enough in the topic that you want to pay attention. And then the advice given to me is definitely keep these tutorials about 3 to 5 minutes. Just see, that was a 3-minute video. It actually maybe seemed like it was a bit longer than 3 minutes, but. I see. I never thought about that issue. Yeah, and that's essentially what we did. She was having a hard time reading it. So any time that you didn't see her on camera, she had that script in her hand and was essentially reading it. But all good points, good points. Yes? It's a mix, and I should let Brian answer that, but we've kind of, well, I guess the question is, what about the webinars that K-State has started? Mostly they're just available to the agents per their request. They kind of thought, well, let's keep it private amongst them, and then they'll have some information to give to producers. They just felt more comfortable. There has been a few instances where the Rust issue emerged, and so that was available producer-wide, and there was a really good attendance. Anybody could listen in on that. So they're generally about 2 hours. That's about how long they are. And there's a spot in there at the end for question and answer. Jim.
Gotta keep us on time. Sorry. Thank you. Our next speaker.